I was a speaker on a security panel this week, and one of the guys on there does, you know, military security. I mean, like, they know scarier things than we do. And
they don't know you in the morning.
You're listening to the Help Me With HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax, HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to the Help Me With HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims with HIPAA for MSPs. And joining me, as always, is Donna Grindle of Cardin Compliance. Hi, Donna.
Hi, David.
How are you?
You know, I just never know. You know, we can be chatting normal. You'll say, let's get started. And then you become weird.
Weirder. That's what it's supposed to be. Yeah, you got to put your game on.
Got to be ready.
Yep. So today, the hits just keep on coming.
You got to say it like, the hits just keep on coming.
Yeah. Throw my DJ voice in there.
That's right. You got it. You got that voice. You do it.
But so in 2016, the year we are in, OCR, just in case you're listening to it in like 2020, OCR is just killing it.
No.
I mean, they have all these settlements coming out. We've hit 10 resolution agreements so far this year. Mm-hmm. One more, and we will equal the number of agreements in all of the past 2 years combined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we kept, you know, we had talked about the enforcement was changing. We were going to see a lot of things, and there was a backup, and last year was a transition year. And it's actually more than I had anticipated.
That's impossible.
Well, they're coming faster, let me just say. You know, faster.
Yeah.
Well, that and the total resolution amount for these 10. And again, now if I miscalculated, there's always a disclaimer. I did it. So I'm always in a hurry. But I tried to go through and I added up all 10 of them. And from what I can tell, the resolution amounts are $20,314,800, just to be
exact. Nice.
Of all the ones announced in 2016.
Well, now you know how they can do them faster. That can pay for a lot of people.
No. Well, and you know, it's like people are like, what do they get to do with that money? I was like, they got a backlog so long that, you know, won't even put a dent in how much they need funding
mm-hmm.
to be able to cover all this stuff. And, they're trying to make a point so that they don't have to do so much of this. You know, they really prefer just evaluating something that happened and everybody's copacetic. Everybody agrees, oh, we made a mistake. We were doing all these things. Now we're doing these things. We're good. Mm-hmm. You know, and we've had a couple of different clients where we've worked with them and they've been able to get resolutions that are corrective ones and they're not these big dollar amounts, which is a great thing considering what these dollar amounts are.
Yeah, no kidding.
So that's good news.
So the best thing about these is even though they're not good news for some, at least the ones that have the problems, they are somewhat good news for the rest of us because we're able to then pay attention to the details, and it tells us exactly what the OCR has a problem with in each case and makes it clear what OCR wants us to do. So,
yeah, learn from their mistakes.
Yeah, learn from others so you don't make your own.
It's always important to learn from others' mistakes. That's always my theory.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I often know as well, like I told my siblings because I was the oldest, I've cleared this huge path of things our parents are prepared to deal with. Just go down that path and it'll be pretty easy for you. And they each went down the opposite side, you know. You could have learned, you know, but no, you got to make your own. You go ahead.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. I still get blamed for more gray hair on my parents, though, but I digress.
So back to the case at hand.
Case at hand. Let's learn from their mistakes, David.
Yeah, because we would spend a long time learning from yours.
Yeah, I notice you're not bringing yours up.
I have no mistake. Well, that was this one time.
Yeah. And 10 others, and that was in one day. Well,
I'll divorce that one. Let's move on. So,
so both of these breaches, it's very important to note that they relate to the resolution agreements, rather, relate to breaches in 2013. Note to self, we're in 2016.
It takes a little time.
So we've still got, we haven't even hit the breaches that occurred last year. And everybody was calling last year the year of the healthcare breach.
So I guess so we 2018 will be the year of the resolution.
Well, we keep talking about it, you know, but there surely this pickup in pace now that they've had, last year was a huge transition for the organization as a whole. They got new leadership. And all kinds of things changed because they didn't have these responsibilities in place all along. It wasn't like this was something they already had geared up. You got to figure out how to do it all. Mm-hmm. But Ole Miss, or I'm sorry, the University of Mississippi Medical Care Medical Center, UMMC. But for those of us in the SEC, we call them Ole Miss. Because SEC. But, you know, as I said, it's not an amount to shake a stick at. It's $2.75 million resolution. And a March 2013 breach, which this is the one where I was like, I need to read that again. Because they said it was a password-protected laptop, which means they had a Windows password on it, but it doesn't mean it was encrypted.
Right. And
that's what I always find interesting is they try to kind of take the sting out by saying it was password protected, but...
Which doesn't mean a whole lot.
No.
When it's just a Windows password.
Right.
Just so everybody realizes that. A Windows password, if that's all you have, that doesn't mean much.
Yeah, I mean, I have a little cable that plugs into a USB port. I take the hard drive out, I plug it in, and I can get to everything on there. I don't. It doesn't matter what the password is. If it's encrypted, no. But, you know.
Yeah, encryption a lot harder. If it's just a Windows password, any halfway decent IT knowledgeable person can get through the password in less than 5 minutes.
Yeah, don't even worry about the password. Oh, there's a password on it. We'll just take the hard drive out. We'll get it another way. So, at any rate, it doesn't really mitigate the damage, even though you feel better by saying it's password protected. And if it makes you feel better, by all means, do it. But the interesting scenario, we hear about stolen laptops all the time. But this was stolen by a visitor to the ICU, as far as they can tell, because there was somebody that was there in the ICU and had asked about borrowing one of the laptops. And then later on, laptop was gone.
So wait a minute. So somebody comes into the ICU and they say, can I borrow your laptop? And an employee says, sure.
Well, no, they say, apparently they say no. But then and a laptop was later stolen. Laptop disappears. And you kind of, they happened within a brief time frame. So you kind of tie the two together as best they can.
Okay, I got you.
But the thing is that laptop, so you've already got somebody that's in the medical center. Mm-hmm. That laptop was tied into the wireless network already. And users in the wireless network could get to Active Directory stuff that had thousands of generic usernames and passwords in them. And we've talked about this. So it had roughly 10,000 patients dating back to 2008. It's a lot. So, you know, here's a laptop that you think is sitting here. And how many times do people tell you, well, you know, that's a treatment area. We don't ever have to worry about that. And ICU is intensive care. That means somebody's watching over everything all the time. And somebody walked out with a laptop. So you can't tell me that a laptop sitting on a one of those carts they put them on in the hallway of any office is not prone to being stolen. Nah. It's not safe. So that was the big Ole Miss breach and $2.75 million resolution. And we'll talk about the cap in just a minute. The big, gigantic one, which is the biggest settlement to date. And note that it's clear that they say to date because there could be beer. We still haven't talked about Anthem, you know. And so $5.5 million.
Wow.
I know. Jeez, you know.
Yeah, and for those who run around saying, oh, the HIPAA max is 1.5 million. No.
Yeah. Pay attention here because there's some pretty interesting stuff about these violations that'll get your attention. It's not just because, oh, well, they're big, so they take more money. It's that they made bigger mistakes. Mm-hmm. And the money, if it's $5.5 million, if you really did the math on some of these violations, that could be, you know, a lot of millions. Four or five times that many, at least, if not more, when we try to calculate them. And we'll get into that in just a second with the actual violations they came up with. But the really bad thing about Advocate Health, and Advocate Health is the largest provider, it's a health system in Illinois. So they're like in Chicago area and around that. They have like 250 facilities and some practices, and it's massive. So there's this $5.5 million, and it's because they had three breaches that they notified HHS about. Again, it's 2013, between August 23rd and November 1st, they had three separate notifications to HHS.
Ooh. That's not good.
Yeah, really?
It's like, have we had our monthly breach yet?
I know. It's like, okay, well, you had one in August, September, October, really? And the three different cases, very different scenarios. They had a support center, a main support center, I assume they still do, and four desktops were stolen from there, loaded up with information. It almost 4 million patients on those desktops.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Holy. And then the second one is one that we, you know, we keep talking about and harping on, and hopefully people are starting to pay attention. A company called Black Hawk, and we mentioned them because they're in the resolution agreement as the business associate who did billing services for, and it's clearly only certain scenarios for Advocate Health. The billing service had 2,000, a little over 2,000 patients that were disclosed when, and it says, you know, that unauthorized third party.
Mm-hmm.
So, AKA, we were hacked or we had people in our systems. I don't know. Somebody let their kid play games. I don't. Then they just give you chills when you look over and there's a kid at a computer somewhere in an office.
Yes.
Please stop. But at any rate, so the BA had a breach. So they notified about that. And then our favorite unencrypted laptop stolen from, even better, an unlocked car. Overnight.
Well, you don't want them to bust your windows out.
To get that laptop here. Jeez, a pig. You know, and I was at I was a speaker on a security panel this week, and one of the guys on there does you know, military security. I mean, like they know scarier things than we do, and
they don't know you in the morning.
But in fact, he said, I didn't know I was on the doom and gloom panel. You make me go last. But they were talking about laptops being stolen from lieutenant colonel's cars. But the good news for them is they're encrypted, but they still don't like it. You know, they still aren't happy about it because encryption can be broken, according to them. And so just so you know, the military makes these mistakes, and it was a government car that was all locked up. So
I don't know. I can't grasp. I carry a laptop everywhere I go.
Uh-huh.
Never do I leave it locked or in the car, locked or unlocked. Mm-hmm. It stays with me. It goes in the house. It goes back. You know,
well, that's like on the panel, there's another IT guy, right? And we both come in, and back behind the table where we're all sitting, there's my laptop in my case. There's his laptop in his case. They go with you everywhere. Mm-hmm. If I can't see it, then I got a problem. So,
Or, you know, at worst case, I'm going to lock it in the trunk or something if I've got to leave it in the car. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. I try never to do that. I take it with me. You know, and a lot of people have those rules with their. We have clients that everybody has a laptop. Their rule is you can't ever leave it in the car. You can't.
That's why I
have not even locked in the garage. In the garage.
That's one reason why I carry the laptop backpack. So, and I'm not carrying around some shoulder something or whatever, or a briefcase looking thing. I mean, I throw it on my back like I'm going hiking or something,
you
so
think
that I can
makes
carry
you look
it.
Cool.
No, it's just the fact that it's easier to carry.
I know.
It's making you know. Fun. So, but I mean, I look cool anyway. But anyway.
Okay, there you go.
Maybe I should get my bag like embroidered, this laptop encrypted.
That's a good one. I like that one. So, back to the resolution agreement. So, the cases, you know, the dollar amounts. And then, of course, as we always reiterate to us, the most important part is the corrective action plan. And the corrective action plan is an indicator of how much work they think they need to do. You know, because there's some resolution agreements with no corrective action plan, and they say it's because by the time we finish this, they had done everything that we thought they needed to do. I think there's been one of those. But it has happened, and that's a lot of reasons why the cases where we worked with folks is like we helped them resolve the things that caused the breach. And, you know, they brought us in after in both cases, but maybe we could have stopped them before. But anyway, 3 years for Ole Miss, 3-year corrective action plan, 2 years for Advocate Health. And they are slightly different than what we normally see, but, you know, not really a lot. They're kind of worded a little different, and they got some interesting things in the Ole Miss one. But first, let's review the violations that they list, because, you know, they always say, here's what they did wrong. Mm-hmm. And then the corrective action plan is, here's how you have to fix it. So, essentially, the here's what they did wrong list is the list of things that you should make sure you're not doing. And the corrective action plan is the list of things that you should already be doing.
Right.
Easy peasy, right, Dave?
Now, have you seen the corrective action plan go past 3 years?
No.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
There might have been one, but...
So it's so for Ole Miss to get 3 years, they're pretty much saying that the stolen laptop is just the tip of the iceberg.
Well, yeah, because let's look at what their violations were. So the first violation is they have no security policies and procedures, and they have had none for over 11 years, i.e. since the security rule came into play. There's no written policies and procedures, just nothing.
That's like $15 million fine right there.
I know. It could be, you know. $1.5 million per year per violation. So there's one violation for 11 years. Then we have over 1 year with absolutely no physical safeguards in place. So you can have some things, you can be doing things, but if they're not written down, that's a violation. So the violation of no security policies and procedures, things aren't written down. Even though they were doing some, the ICU apparently had no physical safeguards on their laptops.
Of course not. Somebody could walk up and take it.
Well, but now,
can I borrow this
laptop?
This
is one thing nobody we haven't talked about. What kinds of physical safeguards can you actually do with laptops? And there are lots that make it not easy. I mean, one of the easiest things is plug it into a docking station. At least then it can't just get up and walk away quickly. It takes a little bit. That's at least making it, you know, you're slower or faster than the guy next to you. And then the other is most laptops have the little cable connectors on them where you can actually lock them in. So if you're moving them around on these carts, you lock them to the carts. So they have to push the whole cart out.
It's like a bicycle lock.
You know, so, and then there's others where you can, you know, have them in a locked cabinet. But, you know, at least have a docking station. And if they're mobile, put them on something where they lock in or plug into something that locks them down. Don't make it, you know, realize it's just laying there and you can get up and walk away with it. And people will do that. I had a friend that had an iPad and he was sitting in a restaurant, had the iPad laying on the table. They had been working on it. And then everybody lays it down, everybody's eating. And they were maybe six steps from the door, And this guy just walks by, grabs the iPad, and runs out the door. And you know, and it's like, did that just happen? And you go to chase him, he's gone. So, yeah. So having them laying around is a very dangerous thing, no matter where you are, even if you're right there with it. So they had no physical safeguards for over a year, and I'm not quite sure how they got to over a year, but that's what they went with. So there's another $1.5 million that they could have done. Then we have, and this one, this was one of the ones that I often have to answer questions about when I say you must have unique usernames for all your users. You can't use a shared username. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure.
But that's not convenient.
It's not convenient. Security's not convenient.
Can you just make everybody's username admin?
Yeah. Can't we just?
Or a user.
Can it be my medical? Can it be UMMC and password one? Yeah. So clearly they were doing that. And for over 8 years, they had had no unique usernames assigned. So I guess for the 3 years before that, they really didn't have access to things. I don't know. Or they had so few users that they still had unique names. But they started using these shared names 8 years ago. So there's another 8 years that they could have gone up to 1.5. Mm. And then this one, I don't know if they didn't have an attorney, but somebody somewhere wasn't looking, because they, after the breach, they notified the press and they notified OCR, but they didn't notify the patients in writing. They even put it on their website, but they're like, oh, you know, surely they'll see it. I don't know. It's Mississippi. You never know. I mean, they see things differently there, but,
we will get email from Mississippi.
Shout
people.
Out to my old Miss friends.
She's a bulldog. What do you expect?
I know. That's what you got to do. Anyhow, the rule says, and this happened in 2013, so, you know, clearly well after the breach notification rule was in place, why they didn't notify the patients in writing, I got nothing. So that's a huge one, and that applies for every patient that was involved in the breach, which 10,000 patients. That's another violation. So there's another $1.5 million they could have done. Since it's 10,000 patients, probably going to do it.
So we're up to like $40 million
now. And that's on the Ole Miss one. And it's just involved one laptop. So to people that are like, I can't believe they're fining them. They're going so far below fining them. They call it a resolution agreement. It's a settlement. They've only fined one person, which could have settled for way less, I'm sure. So that's the violations for Ole Miss. Then you've got Advocate Health. And with their three breaches, oh my goodness. So, of course, they did a risk analysis, and we talk about this. You know, we even tried to do a session on an episode on what is a risk analysis, because so many people don't seem to get that. You know, they think, oh, well, I ran this report and I checked this stuff off on a spreadsheet. I'm good. But no, their risk analysis didn't include all facilities, IT equipment, apps, and data systems utilizing EPHI.
Okay.
Bam. So that is forever. There's no policies and procedures to limit physical access to that support center where the desktops were stolen. And I'm like, really? I mean, no policies and procedures to limit.
Can I borrow this desktop?
Uh-huh. And that's where almost 4 million patients were stolen with those four desktops. I'm still not quite sure how that transpired off of four desktops. Then failed to reasonably, and I like that they make a point of saying reasonably, failed to reasonably safeguard the EPHI at the support center. So that's two different things. I don't have policies and procedures, and probably because of that, I failed to reasonably safeguard it. So that's another thing. And then, not only did they have a breach from that billing company, Blackhawk, but they didn't have a business associate agreement in place. So from the minute they gave them their 2,000 patients, if they gave them one patient a day for 2,000 days, every time they gave them a patient, they were in violation. because they had no business associate agreement.
So how can, I mean, that's kind of a two-way street as well, though. How can Black Hawk not say, hey, you know, we kind of need a BAA from you guys?
Well, you know, and I often question that. And I say to people, you know, and I wonder if there's any repercussions for Black Hawk. And we don't really see that because they're not the entity that's in charge of making it. But if Black Hawk, let's say that Black Hawk's breach occurred because they outsource IT to an IT company, then they could get hit for having the breach without a business associate agreement with the IT company. Mm-hmm. But I'm not quite sure exactly how that's going to play out or has played out. We won't necessarily know all of that. I am curious to know if they're still doing business with Advocate Health. But because of the fact that they didn't have the, and they say, assurances from the business associate. And apparently, they really didn't have any kind of business associate management in place. And we've talked about this a lot. Just because they signed a contract, I don't feel assured. Do you?
I feel assured I can have a contract.
No. Assurances of them protecting the information and meeting HIPAA compliance requirements? None. Mm-hmm. We see too many people, and we hear them. They tell us. You know, and we hear about it with people telling us things, and they're not even one of our clients or a BA of our clients. They're just asking us questions about it. And we're like, you mean you don't know to do this? So it's exactly like you said, Black Hawk should have said, look, we need one of these in place. So business associates need to take that on in some places to protect not only yourself, but your clients, because clearly it matters. Because your client, Advocate Health, Black Hawk's client, also got dinged for not having the contract, but also for disclosing the patients, because you got two violations for doing it. Number one is, I'm not doing the contract, which is what I'm obligated to do. And number two is, the minute I give you data, I've done a breach and an improper disclosure. So then I improperly disclosed it to Black Hawk, who then improperly disclosed it again. Oh, my God.
Follow the bouncing ball.
Yeah. And then no safeguards on the laptop stolen from an unlocked car. So first of all, they're letting people take a laptop with patient data on it that's not encrypted, and then also not giving them any rules to follow to protect it. So there you have it. That's a lot of violations.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you get to what they're giving them in their corrective action plan. And, you know, a lot of it's the same. But one of the things that was interesting in the Ole Miss one is that they have to designate an internal monitor, which I thought was really interesting. They shall designate a qualified workforce member of University of Mississippi to be an internal monitor and to review their compliance with the corrective action plan. Hmm. I'd never seen that one in there before. So I'm not quite sure what they're worried about. And again, you know, different attorneys for OCR negotiate these. So it's not like stuff there's any kind of standard. And they do it based on each environment. So it says the monitor must certify in writing that he or she has expertise in compliance with the HIPAA rules. And can work in an independent, a professionally independent fashion, taking into account the employment or professional relationship and any other business relationships or engagements may exist. So basically they're saying, we need to know that you're going to put somebody in charge that actually understands this stuff, and they're not going to do the cover up that the higher ups want you to do. You know, and when you get into these university settings, especially the big ones, you know, there's a lot of cases where people are like, protect the university at all cost. And we've seen enough of that in the news to know it's true. So they formally designate that, and I have never seen that, but I find it interesting. And then HHS has to approve them. We believe this person's good enough. And then that person has 30 days. Once the HHS says, okay, we anoint you, then they have to come up with, here's our plan for the corrective action stuff of how to fulfill all of these duties in the plan. So it's a little different. We haven't ever seen anything like that that I recall, and there may be some older ones, but I don't know anything. And then the monitor's job then is to basically say, okay, all of you people have to do these things, and I'm going to have a quarterly progress meeting with the security official. We're going to interview workforce people, follow up on reports, security violations. It's almost like we know that there's a security person and they're making them have an actual HIPAA compliance officer overseeing everything and do a quarterly report. And then, I mean, there's a lot of stuff about this monitor. That's what I found so interesting is if they decide to terminate the individual. So how many times do you have, well, you're not taking care of me the way I want. You're fired. And so if they decide to terminate it, they have to notify HHS prior and then get their approval, a removal of designation, unless exigent circumstances require immediate termination or removal. I'm not sure what, if you had somebody in charge that was involved in a breach themselves, that might be an exigent circumstance, you know, or an illness or those kind of things. But the fact that they have to get clearance for who's in charge, I find quite fascinating. And that they said there's even a validation review in the event that HHS has reason to believe that the monitor reviews or reports fail to conform to the requirements, they are inaccurate, then HHS may, at its sole discretion, so we don't have to listen to anything you say, conduct its own review to see if you're doing what you're supposed to do. So they're not really counting on these folks to get in there and do what they're supposed to do in the cap. And I've never seen that happen. And it also says just because you designate this person doesn't mean we can't decide to come in there, investigate, or do more reviews. So I don't know what they did in that settlement, but something.
It made somebody mad.
That or they made it clear we'll sign. You know, it's like the BA, we'll sign it, but we're not doing it.
Yeah, I've heard that a time or two.
Yeah, I'm going to sign it because you're making me sign it, but I'm not going to do it. And then, of course, after that, then it's the normal stuff. You got 90 days to do a risk analysis and risk management plan and get approval and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, the 15 days and the 30 days. And we've talked about all of those before. And then after the approval of it, you got 30 days to implement your risk management plan. And they have to update their information security policy and other policies as required to comply, because we talked about they didn't really have any that really dealt with HIPAA. They must have had some, but who knows. And they, of course, have to get that approved. The internal monitor has to approve it within 90 days of the so it's kind of like they have a go-between. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, get a real breach response plan and set up unique user IDs. Can you imagine how people are going to complain? Those poor tech people.
So, yeah.
And the internal monitor has to do quarterly updates on the progress of that. Security awareness training, because clearly nobody really worried about it. And making sure that the new workforce members are trained, and this is an important thing, trained within 30 days of beginning their work. So we saw one that said they had to be trained within 15 days, one that said 30 days, but they're making sure that they set a limit on how long between you get hired and when you're trained.
Right. Not within the first year or the next time we have HIPAA training in 8 months from now.
That and review the approved security awareness and training materials annually, and where appropriate, update them. Hey, we talked about having a updated building a training program. Hello. I think we talked about doing it on a regular basis. So at least we're ahead of the curve on that one. But that internal monitor thing, I don't know. I don't really understand what the deal is or what happened.
Interesting.
Let's call somebody up, David. Who do we know?
Jocelyn.
Hey, yeah, we still want you on the show.
Come on, Miss Sandy.
Come
Take
on.
My call. Take my call.
Yeah. We don't even know how to call you. Let's just send her an email, see what she says.
Jocelyn Samuels at OCR.com.
.gov. HHS, OCR.HHS. I don't know. We'll find something. I know it's published. We'll they publish it.
We will find you.
So then Advocate Health, you know, modify their risk analysis. They hadn't done one. Develop a risk management plan. Hadn't done one of those. Evaluate environmental and operational changes. This one was a little interesting because it said they had to have a written process to regularly evaluate any environmental or operational changes that affect the security of EPHI in the possession or control, including acquisition of new entities. So I'm wondering if they like acquired somebody and said, well, because they didn't have the right policies, just because we acquired them, the laptop got stolen. There's no specifics on that. And I'm not going to go digging around, but it's making it clear that when you acquire somebody, you better be asking about their HIPAA compliance. And mm-hmm. we've told people before, they've been like, we want to work with you on this project. We want to do this assessment or we want to do this audit of stuff, but we've got to wait because we're in the middle of an acquisition. Are you checking on their compliance? Because that would be a bigger project that I would be more worried about. Oh, no, we'll do that afterwards. Okay. All righty then. So, you know, we definitely worry about that. The encryption report, and you and I've talked about this before on encryption, you need to know it's actually staying encrypted.
Right.
Because people can turn that off. If they know how to get in, they can turn it off because it's inconvenient. It's inconvenient. Review and revise policies and procedures on device and media controls. And they tried to cover everything related to the use of hardware and electronic media, including but not limited to desktop computers, laptop computers, servers, tablets, mobile phone devices, USB drives, external hard drives, DVDs, and CDs that may be used to access, store, download, or transmit EPHI.
Wow, they didn't cover 8-track tape.
I got some 80s, you know. I love my 8-track tape player back in the 80s.
With your Crystal Gale collection.
Hey, Lynyrd Skynyrd, thank you very much. Southern Rock.
And Ray Stevens.
I like me some Ray Stevens. Talk about politically incorrect stuff. Oh, that's funny stuff. All right. Now I'm totally off track thinking of Ray Stevens songs.
Everybody's like, what's an 8-track player?
I know. Yeah, because you had to, you know what, you had four. Ka-kunk. Go on to the next one. We'll listen to part of that.
Yeah.
So, and then they have, just to finish up theirs, is the review and revise policies and procedures on facility access, because remember they said they didn't have any. And then, of course, build a business associate management program. And this was really interesting, because we often tell people that I don't think that the compliance officer needs to be the one that's worried about doing the business associate management because this is legal stuff and purchasing and all of this. It needs to be done in that area. And their job is just to make sure that it's done. They just check it off. Do we have it or do we not? But it says designate one or more individuals who are responsible for ensuring that Advocate enters into BAAs with each of its BAs, like they're supposed to do, prior to disclosing EPHI. That's a good idea. Let's do it first. And, you know, and the program that we do, trying to teach them how to build a proper business associate management, I say, you know, when you start negotiating with somebody, you negotiate the BAA first. Because if you can't get that resolved, it doesn't matter what price, because it will become very expensive at some point. So create a process for assessing current and future business relationships to determine whether each relationship involves a BA, which I say at the beginning, that should be step one in any kind of procurement system that you have in a covered entity or business associate is what we're getting from this vendor or subcontractor, do they need to have a BA? And if so, then we start with that. And then a process for negotiating and entering into them for both paper and electronic. They made sure they said that. Limit disclosures to the minimum necessary. We've talked about that. create a process for maintaining documentation. So they threw this in here because they're like, you're not doing it now, but we're going to put this in here just in case that you must maintain this information for 6 years beyond the date of the termination of the business associate agreement.
Hmm.
Yeah. Not just like, okay, well, I signed it, you know, in 2010, so now I'm done. No. If I'm still doing work for you, I still got 6 years from whenever we stop. So, and their enhanced privacy and security awareness training. Isn't it amazing that every CAP program requires training?
Yeah. That's the key.
It's the people, people. And, you know, it's augmented training to do general instruction on the policies and procedures, but also to make sure that they understand that these revisions and why they're there. And it's security awareness. And to say, this is why we're doing it, because we've screwed up. So there you go, brother. I mean, there's, you know, monitoring, reporting, assessments, and all that kind of stuff. There's this big and long. Good thing is, well, I don't know, as long as it is, you know, as long as it is, and they only got 2 years to get it all done. I don't know which one's better off, the 3 year or the two.
Yeah, that's a lot of work to do in just 2 years.
Yeah, I got overwhelmed just reading it. I'm exhausted now. I just read it again, and I'm exhausted.
Yeah, just go take a nap.
Yeah, it's Friday, nap day.
So that gives everybody some things to look at, see if you have those problems floating around. So we're not having a show about you.
That's pretty good. Or if you want us to have a show about you, let's be about how good you feel about your compliance program.
Yeah.
Not because you're in the news.
Yeah. That would be preferable. So that's our show for today. We thank you for listening. We invite you to go over to iTunes and review our show and give us 5-star reviews and tell me how awesome I am. You can also share us out on social media. Visit us on the web at helpmewithhipaa.com. If you'd like to, you can always leave a question right there on the front page of our website, and we may feature it in a future podcast episode. So anything else, Donna?
Oh, well, I don't know when this one comes out. I don't know when this one's coming out. So I am speaking at a couple of things, but forgot to promote them.
Where will you be speaking?
Shout out to Azalea Health. That's happening next week, so there's no way this will come out. And the Georgia HFMA and MGMA combined conference on the 26th. So if you're going to be at any of those, hopefully I've seen you by the time you hear this.
So that's August 26th, right?
Yes, and the 19th.
All right. So where's the, since the 19th is going to be passed by the time this is done, where will you be on the 26th?
St. Joseph Hospital in Atlanta.
That's where you need to be. All right. So if you don't have anything else to do, go out there and see Donna harass her.
Yeah, this will be over too. So I got to do better about that. You know, I got to do better. Every time I lock one of those in, I got to put it on a list on the show notes.
Yeah.
But thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. Ooh, ooh. You're very welcome.
Oh.
All right. So join us again next Friday for a new episode. And remember that HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.